Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sisano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we are discussing the news from June 10th to June 16th. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric, sure. So just a couple of ETHHub announcements first. We launched the merch shop this week. So we've been teasing this for a few weeks now. We finally got it live. Took a little bit just due to some backend stuff that we needed to do. But yeah, it's now live. You can find the links to it in the newsletter. We've got four unique kind of Ethereum-inspired designs that we had custom designed for the merch shop, and also our logo on there too. So we've seen a few people buy stickers, phone cases, you know, a couple of t-shirts, things like that, which is really cool to see. So yeah, if you're interested in any of that, definitely go visit our merch shop. And if you have ideas for anything you'd like to see, kind of any design ideas, just feel free to DM either of us, and you know, we'll see if we can make that happen, basically. We also updated our Plasma page this week on ETHHub. So a brand new rewrite, thanks to NansPro is his handle. We put up a bounty on Gitcoin for 100 DAI, and he, you know, jumped on it, did the Plasma page, and it turned out really, really, really great. So if you're interested in Plasma, or you're a dev or anything like that, definitely go check it out. And if you see anything that should be added or changed on there, just submit a pull request. All right, jumping into the news. Now, again, I think this is like the fifth or sixth week in a row we've spoken about Facebook's stablecoin, but this week was a big bout of news. So basically, The Block broke this news story, basically saying all the partners have been revealed for Facebook's stablecoin. So there was a bunch of people in there. There was like some pretty heavy hitters in there, like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, and Uber. And these partners are basically going to be those people that are, well, those companies that are going to be paying $10 million each to be a node. So there's going to be 100 of these partners, up to, you know, obviously $1 billion of revenue a year for Facebook coming out of this. But they've landed like basically every big kind of tech company you can think of. Like, you know, Coinbase is even in there. I'm just going through the list now. There's like Vodafone, Lyft, you know, Stripe, eBay, Spotify. All these companies are joining, you know, and this is just, you know, shows the power of Facebook, right? When they flex hard because they have such a large user base. It's like, you know, whatever it is, 2 billion active users. So it's kind of a no-brainer for these companies to jump on whatever, you know, open kind of initiatives Facebook's doing. And they also announced that the testnet will be going live this week. And we have, I think, the white paper by the time this podcast goes out, the white paper would have already dropped. So I think that's due to go live soon. I mean, there's no point in me saying how many hours from now since this podcast will be out before after then. But yeah, so I guess when you're listening to this, you'll know all the details from the white paper. But, you know, we can speculate for now. Not much left to speculate on, I guess. It just seems that Facebook's trying to make this a really kind of big deal and something to challenge the traditional payment system.
Yeah, I guess more details. I mean, they clearly seem to be trying to make, like you said, a new global financial payment system now based on the stablecoin. Very interested to see, I guess, what the white paper has. And I guess finally, like you said, we've talked about it so much now, just speculating. It'll be nice to finally get some details, and then everybody can kind of move on from the speculative phase to, I guess, eventually they'll just be launching it and we'll see the use of it. You know, I'm excited, I guess, for the adoption front. Like, this will bring more people into crypto, obviously. Although I still think like Facebook's going to hide this to most of their users, right? It's not going to be like, hey, come grab your crypto and then get involved with crypto. It's just going to be like, hey, here, you can pay this user in a game, or you can send this money to someone that you're friends with on Facebook, and it's called LibraCoin. Like, you know, I don't really know how much they're going to like show the user about crypto, which is one thing I'm interested about. But at the end of the day, it still brings more users in. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, people are going to come in. This is 1 billion people or whatever that are going to come into crypto, and then they're instantly going to go buy Bitcoin and Ethereum. Not convinced of that, to be honest. We'll see. But, you know, obviously a lot of heavy hitters incentivized to kind of make usage share happen. I guess, you know, they're paying all this money to be node operators. I would assume that's because they're assuming they're going to get some transaction fees. So there'll probably be a small bit of transaction fees on top of this. Although I can't imagine it would be like the traditional sources now, like, you know, 3% on a credit card or anything, because then kind of what would the point of this be? So, you know, are these node operators, what are their incentives beyond fees? Just, I guess, being a part of this? Yeah. And if the volume's not there and it kind of dies off, are they all going to just bail on it and not want to pay that much a year? So that'll be a very interesting aspect to watch play out too. And, you know, I see people, you know, I saw someone tweet like, this will teach people that non-government private money can exist. And, you know, then that'll lead them to researching Bitcoin and stuff. But I mean, again, the white paper's not out yet, but from what I understand, this is a stable coin that's going to be tied to some form of government money, right? Like backed by USD or maybe a combo of USD, Euro, whatever. That's still, you know, government money. This isn't some new crypto, private crypto asset money that's being created here, at least, you know, as far as I've read and seen so far. So, you know, I'm not bullish on the idea at all. I think it's kind of against the ethos of crypto in general. You know, I've talked a lot in the past. I'm not even a fan of like USDC and any of that stuff because it's, you know, it's basically just putting traditional fiat on the chain. And it's good for adoption, but in the long run, you know, I hope use cases like this aren't what went out in the long run in crypto. And I don't think it will be, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think one thing to look at is kind of who they've partnered with, right? Like we heard rumors a few weeks ago about them contacting crypto exchanges to get the Facebook stablecoin listed. So even if they don't present it to the user kind of on the front end, right, and explicitly state, hey, this is a cryptocurrency you're buying, you know, you should go learn about other cryptocurrencies. I think there'll be a natural kind of progression. Like if, say, the stablecoin's listed on Coinbase, users might be like, oh, what's Coinbase? Can I go buy it from, you know, from Coinbase here? Oh, look, what's this Bitcoin, Ethereum thing, whatever. Basically, I think that's where the kind of bridge happens, but I don't know. Like I'm speculating, right? I don't know if it's going to be that explicit where Facebook walks you through going and creating a Coinbase account, or maybe you can sign up to Coinbase with your Facebook account or something. Who knows at this stage? But the fact that they have such big partners on board already, like, I mean, just going through the list, like there's Andreessen Horowitz as well, like Union Square Ventures. It's basically all of Silicon Valley has just decided, hey, we're going to join this new Facebook crypto thing. Whether they're doing it because it's kind of generating hype and buzz or because they actually see a pretty bright future for this, like just based on the partners alone, I think that this could be something big if executed correctly. But yeah, we're just speculating here. And as I said, people will be listening to this after the white paper has dropped. So whether we're right or wrong in our speculation will be known soon enough.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely the best tweet I saw about this and basically sums up my opinion perfectly. And this thing blew up. It's got 6,200 retweets and 17,000 likes. Is by Sarah Jamie Lewis. And it says, can't wait for a cryptocurrency with the ethics of Uber, the censorship resistance of PayPal, the centralization of Visa, all tied together under the proven privacy of Facebook. It's such a genius tweet and sums everything up perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that one as well. That was pretty funny. I definitely think that captured the whole scene and, you know, what this is going to be. So basically, like, there was a lot of discussion around if it's going to compete with Bitcoin or whatever. It obviously doesn't compete with Bitcoin or other traditional kind of cryptocurrencies that are trying to be like a global money or a store of value while being decentralized and not controlled by any one entity. It obviously doesn't compete there, but still, Facebook's reach is quite grand, right? They can shove products in people's faces and get them using it quite quickly. I mean, they basically killed a lot of Snapchat with their Instagram, you know, stories feature when they launched that. So Facebook does have that user base that no one else on the planet, no other company on the planet has. So that's why I think it can be quite big. But we'll see. We'll see what happens going forward. We'll see what happens when they actually launch it. And I guess we'll know everything, you know, in a few hours. All right, moving on. Binance. I never know how to say it. Like, I just say Binance. Sometimes I say it Binance, but anyway.
I'm pretty sure I say it both ways. Every podcast I rotate, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to say Binance. But yeah, they're blocking US customers. So that's a bit of news that came out this week for all our US friends out there. They've announced that they're launching a new Binance US that's going to basically be where the US customers can go to trade. I definitely think this is going to be a completely watered down exchange where you can only trade kind of, I guess you could call them US sanctioned coins. So like BTC, ETH, maybe even stuff like XRP, basically that's already on the main platforms like Coinbase and even Poloniex. We've seen this happen, like this has become a trend over the last few weeks where a lot of these exchanges that they're listing a lot of tokens that might be considered securities. So Bitrex, they listed a bunch, Poloniex listed a bunch as well. And then people are funneling US customers into their own watered down exchange and international customers have a different exchange. It's quite funny when you look at the list of countries that get funneled into this kind of, they get banned from the international exchange. It's like the US and then a bunch of third world or sanctioned countries. So it just kind of shows you like the regulatory state of the US towards crypto at the moment. Like we generally like to think that it's been friendly, but I mean, there's so much ambiguity around, you know, regulations and laws and things like that, that we you know, exchanges are being forced to basically create an entirely separate exchange for their US customers. But yeah, so this news came out and I put a tweet out saying this was extremely bullish for DEXs. Like I definitely think it is, especially with, you know, we've got tech like Starkware coming out with to scale DEXs now. So eventually DEXs are going to become just as big and just as functional as centralized exchanges. So I imagine a lot of the US customers will just funnel into that. Of course, there's also, you know, the front ends of these decentralized exchanges, the website operators can geo-block US customers, but that's easily routed around with a kind of a VPN or something of the sort. So yeah, you could basically just buy ETH on Coinbase or whatever, transfer it out to a wallet and then go trade on a decentralized exchange. So definitely bullish for DEXs there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess a lot to kind of recap here. It's funny, I went back to the episode back in mid-January when ETH Classic was 51% attacked. We talked about how we thought, you know, exchanges would start delisting alts that didn't have much volume. We mainly were referencing, you know, if they were 51% attacked, exchanges won't want to deal with that. But also, you know, in the past, we've talked about just the hassle of managing all these alts and like that risk is out there, regulatory risk is out there. So it seems like we kind of hit that nail on the head. And to me, it was kind of obvious that this was going to happen to the US-based exchanges. You know, I don't even think in the future, probably like European exchanges and other countries like that are probably in the clear either. Of course, like you said, the US has the most kind of ambiguity. They also have probably the biggest global reach as far as regulations go. So I think people in general are just scared of them. I'm not really sure it's so much to do with like what action they've taken so far. It's just preemptive that these companies are worried about it, right? And I'm sure there's lots of behind the scenes talks that we're not aware of and these companies being warned or they're going to be gone after or something like that. But yeah, so definitely still hyper bullish on the next wave of DeFi being DEXs. Multiple reasons. Still, we have all the exchange hacks. Now we have exchange delistings of coins people still want to trade and that had decent volume, especially coming from the US still too. And then, yeah, all this technology coming out for DEXs. The biggest problem, of course, has been on the liquidity side. We're seeing a lot of cool technology around both that. Of course, like Uniswap has kind of figured out the liquidity problem. And then just speed and privacy. And I think that's going to bring liquidity to DEXs that are already out there, like a 0x and stuff like that. A lot of cool technology coming out. I'll give a shout out to like Loopring. I've seen an exchange built on that called Dolomite, which looks pretty cool and interesting to me. So a lot of innovation still happening on the DEX space. And I think, like you said, this is going to bring more volume. People still want to trade these things and speculate on them, and the DEXs are the perfect place. And yeah, I had actually tweeted out geoblocks are kind of becoming a thing, but there's actually a pretty easy workaround for apps that want to get around it. It's called Portal Network. So it's basically an integration of ENS with IPFS. So you host your site on IPFS, which is, you know, a completely decentralized hosting solution for content. And then you can tie your ENS domain. So like if we had ethub.eth, once we can get that, which should be soon because it's under 7 characters, they haven't released those yet, we could theoretically host ETHub on IPFS and point that ENS domain to that. And then you can kind of get around geoblocks and a lot of other things, right? Geoblocks isn't really what I'm personally most interested there. It's that in doing that, you're fully decentralizing your website, because right now people could like DNS hijack you or take control of your server or whatnot, and this would totally do away with that. So I do think that'll be a move that we'll see for not just DEXs, but a lot of just Ethereum applications moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to definitely see a lot more of that happening when these things mature. I think even something like Handshake, the new kind of domain name system as well, will allow these kind of decentralized hosting services and, you know, websites to kind of exist more, to proliferate more, I guess you could say, because at the moment we haven't seen like major uptake in this. But I think, you know, that regulatory pressure and that kind of banning of core people in the ecosystem will definitely push people to use these more. And it, you know, it's just like kind of like a Streisand effect, right? You don't want people trading these things, but you ban them from trading them, and then they're just going to want to trade them more. Like, no one's going to stop trading shitcoins just because you ban them from trading them. They're going to probably trade them more because you've told them something that they can't do. Like, banning something has never worked well, especially in America. From what I've seen, it's never worked well. especially because it kind of goes against what I think, like, as an Australian, what I think a lot of Americans hold really dear to themselves is kind of like, you know, their freedom, essentially. So I think that these bans are going to be net negative in the long run for any kind of government or regulatory body that wants them to be a positive for the space or wants to try and control the space. I think they're just going to push people away, and they're going to push innovation overseas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it definitely hurts me a little when I go to a site and it says, you cannot use this. Countries banned: United States, Iran, North Korea. Like, that's basically the list. I'm like, oh, come on, man. We gotta catch up with the times a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. As I mentioned before, it's just like a not very ideal list to be on. And it's just funny seeing America on there when, you know, it's not supposed to be part of that kind of bucket of countries, I guess. All right, moving on to project updates now. So an interesting partnership happened this week, actually, between Axie Infinity and MakerDAO. So Axie Infinity is this platform for kind of NFTs, and they're kind of a blockchain-based game where the things called axes can fight each other. So they've partnered up with MakerDAO to offer unique NFTs to people that have CDPs, and you get an NFT and its rarities based on how much DAI you've drawn from your CDP. Now, this is funny because immediately our good friend DC Investor on Twitter said, what? Because when you really think about it, it's encouraging people who might be kind of, you know, newbie to crypto or newbie to kind of taking out leverage or trading, because blockchain games traditionally kind of attract these more newer people. And I think they're a great onboarding tool for people. But basically, this is Axie Infinity saying, hey, we'll give you a special NFT if you go take lots of leverage on MakerDAO, which, you know, I think it was in the thousands. I think the top NFT was like if you had drawn 20,000 DAI or something from your CDP. So yeah, DC basically said, I'd caution against encouraging people to take out these large CDPs just because they could easily get wrecked. So yeah, it's just funny how I actually didn't think of that at first, like about that negative. I just thought, oh, this is cool. This is like a first for kind of a blockchain gaming company to be partnering with MakerDAO, and it's kind of an interesting mechanism. But I can see why it becomes, you know, quite dangerous for people, especially when you're thinking about leverage and thinking about CDPs and how easily it is to get liquidated due to the, you know, the volatility of ETH price.
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent point, obviously, and made me chuckle a little bit. I was like, it's kind of like if Amex was giving you like stickers in the mail for taking out more debt on your credit card, right? I mean, obviously, that's not an exact comparison, but it's somewhat close. And I think you had a very good point. I'm very bullish on this idea in general for minting NFTs for people that use dApps or, you know, contribute to projects. I think we could leverage it on ETHub for sure. We could mint, you know, 15, 10 very unique tokens that just go to people that contribute content, you know, for layer two scaling pages, or maybe there's just like one for whoever makes the most commits in GitHub gets this one a year, like, and it's a very unique, like, kind of prideful NFT. I think we're going to see a lot of use cases like that. And obviously Gitcoin uses this, and they kind of use their NFTs and their stickers and Flair for kind of reputation on the system. So if someone wants to contribute work to your bounty, you can kind of see all the NFTs they've gained in the past. And it kind of creates a reputation system of sorts. So I think the idea in general is there. I'm not sure that it should be used on the DeFi side. I don't really think... I mean, multiple reasons, right? Like, first, you're kind of tying like your financial history via an NFT to your account, which is kind of weird. And I'm not I'm not sure I like this specific example of it, but I think the idea in general is still pretty good.
Yeah, and I do want to make the point that we don't think that this is like kind of a malicious thing, right? We don't think that Axie has come out and been like, hey, how can we drain money from people through MakerDAO or MakerDAO, you know, the Maker team has done the same thing. I think this is just like a promotion they thought of and were just like, this would be cool. Like, what's the main use case of, you know, Maker? It's like open a CDP, take some DAI out, or whatever. And, you know, they thought, oh, this would be a really cool partnership, which is fine. It's just, I think that the values that they put up, like the fact that it takes multiple, you know, I think tens of thousands of dollars of DAI, sorry. I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically that to get the top NFT, I think that might be a bit too much. But I also think that that's just the nature of, right, of what, you know, what the space that we're in at the moment. There are other games that have done this, like, for example, Cheese Wizards that we spoke about recently. They basically encouraged you to spend more money to get a better, you know, a wizard that had more power. So it's funny when you really think about it. It does it border on kind of gambling, right? Does it like we speak about DeFi and open finance and breaking down barriers, but like, are we devolving into gambling now? Like, I think it just depends on the implementation and how people treat it. But I think there should be maybe not like guardrails or anything, but there should be kind of, I mean, I wouldn't even call them warnings. There should just be something there that says, hey, you know, just be aware that, you know, this is what you're doing. This is what can happen. Like, I guess they are warnings. I don't know. Like, there's two sides of the coin, right? You can either warn people and tell people as much as you want, and they'll just do it anyway. Or you just don't tell them, they do it anyway, then they complain to you later that, oh, I got wrecked. My CDP got liquidated, but now I've got this cool little NFT. Like, yay. It's just, it's very dangerous when you start opening things up to everyone, I think. And that's kind of something that we have to wrestle with as an open system and open protocol, is that when you give people this much power, they tend to abuse it. But that's just the nature of these systems. And I don't think there's really anything that people can do, because if someone else does it, right? If someone says, okay, these are all the warnings, whatever, we're going to limit you, blah, 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 then there'll just be another team that forks that and takes away the limits. That's just the nature of this space. So I think it's a rock and a hard place, but I do think that the more reputable team should be maybe more mindful about these sorts of things and you know, give those initial warnings or kind of, you know, say something on their interface when a new user goes to their site, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. Do you get an NFT when your CDP gets called and you lose all your ether? What is that, a special unlock?
Yeah, you could set that up, right? You could say if you get liquidated, you know, for 100,000 DAI, then you get a special NFT. It's crazy, but I think someone might actually do that. I think I've just given someone an idea. Whoops. All right. Moving on. So this week as well, Austin Griffith, this guy never stopped shipping. He is the shipping king, but he basically put out that he's integrated the Gnosis Safe with the Burner Wallet. So you can deploy a Gnosis Safe with persistence so that, you know, it's not just when you refresh the page, it's gone. It actually stays there in your Burner Wallet. So basically deploy these Gnosis Safe from the Burner Wallet. Now, I'm going to let you speak about this area because you're the Gnosis shill of the podcast. So do you want to give us a rundown about, you know, what the safe is, just a recap for our listeners?
Is that my official new nickname there?
Yeah.
GS, yeah, Gnosis shill. This is pretty cool and it kind of came out of nowhere. Like I didn't know Austin was working on this, and, you know, I talked to him here and there a little bit and he's been on the podcast obviously and just saw the tweet and it's awesome. So, I mean, I guess very basic rundown. Of course, Gnosis Safe is a smart contract wallet, which allows you to do a lot of cool things. Especially around like two-factor authentication and setting up, you know, better social recovery and all that stuff. And so one of the biggest issues with the Burner Wallet, not issues necessarily because the name is literally Burner Wallet, but I think one of the biggest concerns people have once they start using it is you could very easily, you know, burn your wallet and lose your funds on there. So what Austin did is he took Gnosis Safe, which is, of course, you know, completely open source smart contract out there. Anybody can go kind of fork it and play around with it. And he deployed it on the XDAI network. So on the POA side, so on a layer 2 sidechain. And so he deployed it out there. And now if you have a burner wallet, you can say, hey, I want to create a safe, and then you can send funds to it. Now, where the power of this becomes is you can, just like Argent or like Gnosis Safe will be able to do, you can assign different owners to the wallet. Now, normally, like on, say, Gnosis Safe or Argent, if you had like three backup addresses, say it was like your parents and your hardware wallet, you would want like a two of three to sign to recover those funds, right? It looks like Austin's done an implementation where you just need one. So what you can do is you can set your phone and your laptop as, say, a backup to, you know, your other browser or your other computer. So now you kind of have three devices, all, and their addresses are all assigned to your burner wallet. So if you were to lose, say, your device and your burner wallet on your phone, you could go to your laptop and your laptop has ownership over those funds. So it's really cool. It sounds like he's got some other features lined up, but just kind of shows like the power of open source in general, right? And like smart contracts and being able to deploy these things on different networks. Obviously on the XDAI network, they can execute smart contracts, which is a very powerful feature. And this stuff's all really cheap. I think he said to deploy the safe and like add additional addresses as owners of the burner wallet, it was like 0.0003 cents or something like that. So on the video, which came out a few days ago, he's still kind of playing with it in staging. So don't go out there and try and use it yet, he says in the video. But I think this will be a really cool feature add to the burner wallet for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely really keen on this, and definitely go watch the video. Austin explains it quite well. It's about a 5-minute video. It's linked in the newsletter. His energy is infectious. I love watching his videos, Bowtie Friday, as he likes to call it. So yeah, go watch that if you'd like to see a run through of what he's built. All right, next up. So this was curious. This caught my attention this week because a lot of developers were talking about this. It's called Shadowlands. So basically what it is a full text UI dApp platform. So essentially it allows you to interact with dApps without touching a web browser. Now, I can't remember if we've spoken about this before, but I've definitely included it in the newsletter. I remember they got I think it's just one guy that's building this at the moment, but he got an Ethereum Foundation grant to build this out, and he's finally released it to the world this week. So, and I saw a lot of developers get really excited about this because obviously a lot of developers live in command line, and having kind of like this fully, you know, text UI dApp platform available to them through the command line, it, you know, excites them. Kind of, I think, reminded a few people about those old school text-based RPGs that you'd play through as well. So I think it's really cool because it allows you to basically, you know, interact with any dApp that's been kind of integrated with it. So he's got a Maker CDP integration. So you can literally open a CDP from, you know, this using this tool. So you don't have to touch a web browser to do so. Now, we were kind of debating about this before. It's like who this kind of appeals to. I think it really does appeal to devs first and foremost because they like to live in command line for their just everyday day-to-day work. But I think it will appeal to a lot of people who just simply want that lightweight experience as well and don't want to have to use a web browser for everything. I've tried it out. It's really cool. It's quite intuitive. It works very well. You know, and it's lightweight at the end of the day. Like I have like 200 Chrome tabs open, so not having to open another one definitely helps me in that regard.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, as you said, I saw the grant a few months back, so it's been in production and it's released just open source, I think he said, under the MIT license for people to use, which is cool. Yeah, kind of like you were saying, he was targeting what he called the efficiency programmer, which are people that work on quote unquote the back end, right? So people that you know, are used to working in command line and want to just like quickly, you know, program and use the app and see what changed, as opposed to like having to go to the front and do that. And he has a really cool example. Like he has, this is on the Medium post, which I'll link in the podcast notes on our Substack when we put this out. But he's got a Shadowlands version of the Maker CDP portal, and it's just CDP, his CDP is an example, 17861, and it's got like his liquidation price there, is the current price of ETH, the penalty that exists right now, what the stability fee is, and it's just all in a text UI and in the command line. So it's pretty cool to see, just a very different way to interact with dApps. And I'm sure, you know, there's tons of developers, it seems, that are going to be interested in this. This post kind of blew up and seemed like, you know, the Reddit, Ethereum Reddit, people were very interested in it and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of takes off.
Yeah, I think a lot of the interest also came from the fact that it's something different, right? We've seen a lot of the same kind of web UIs, MetaMask, all that sort of stuff pop up, and maybe it's getting a little bit stale. People have been in the ecosystem for a while now. And then kind of this thing comes along and people are like, oh, what's this? This is new. Like it's kind of like, you know, green text on a black background and a command line. And, you know, little reminds you of the Matrix a little bit and feels a bit like you're a hacker when you're using it. So I think that that's what piqued a lot of people's interest as well. As well as, you know, general dev interest. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this evolve. The fact that it's just one guy building it is really cool as well. Like we've spoken about in the past, how we usually see the, you know, one person build something really cool that instantly gets used by a lot of people. You know, for example, Uniswap being the number one example there. So yeah, looking forward to seeing this evolve.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I forgot to mention too, which I can totally see this, he said you could use it as a very efficient way to do like quick common Ethereum tasks. So like sending Ether tokens and tracking and manipulating transactions, which I can definitely see. Like instead of having, you know, launch a web browser and open whatever wallet UI you want to use and, you know, maybe going into MetaMask or in MyCrypto or whatever you use, like I could definitely see just quickly be able to do that stuff in the command line. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, especially if you're already in the command line doing some dev stuff or whatever, would definitely make more sense than opening a web browser. All right, moving on. So just one thing about the on-chain activity this week. So I noticed that Wrapped Bitcoin, so WBTC, the ERC-20 representation of Bitcoin on Ethereum, is, I like to call, silently mooning. So it's been growing a fair bit. Like I went on DeFi Pulse and I went back and I sorted by, you know, WBTC locked in Ethereum, basically. In the WBTC contract. So from the beginning of April, I think I'm looking at it now. So beginning of April is about 80 WBTC in that vault. It's now up to over 300. Now this is without many DApp integrations either. So I speculated that I thought that this would be really bullish once something like MakerDAO integrated this into their CDP portal and things like that. You know, it's already tradable on Uniswap. I actually went to the contract and saw the top holders. So the ones that are labeled on Etherscan token sets is the number one holder that's labeled on there. So token sets offers different sets for like rebalancing between different cryptos. So, you know, one of their sets at the moment is the ETH BTC 50-50 set. So basically you can buy 50% ETH, 50% BTC or WBTC, and it auto rebalances you once a month based on price movements. So yeah, they're the number one holder. And then the next one that's labeled is Uniswap, and then IDEX and Switchio Exchange. And there's a bunch of unlabeled addresses as well that hold the majority of the WBTC. But yeah, so I think this is growing because there is actually some organic growing demand, of course, and people want to have reserves as well. I think the top address, which has 100 WBTC in it, is probably like some sort of reserve address for someone, for a project or something like that. It definitely doesn't feel like a user because they haven't done anything with this WBTC. The last time it was moved was like 32 days ago when it was minted, I think. So it definitely feels like a reserve for a DApp or something. But still, it's great to see that this is growing and, you know, more DApps are integrating it. I still think that we're going to see the killer app be when something like MakerDAO integrates it. Just because we've seen how fast that platform can grow, because people want to, you know, leverage their ETH or WBTC in this case. But obviously, we won't see that till Multicollateral DAI comes out, and we have no idea when that's coming out because it's been a while now. We've been teased it a lot. It's still, you know, not there. I feel like at this point they're just going to drop it one day randomly and say, "Here you go. Here's Multicollateral DAI. Have fun."
Yeah, definitely. That's the ultimate soon TM, right? Multicollateral DAI. Yeah, definitely cool to see this pop. I mean, I guess when it first came out, there weren't many use cases. And now, you know, DeFi apps are starting to add it. Like you said, the biggest is token sets. So that's the set protocol. They've launched some products that people can invest in, you know, Ether and Bitcoin split or Bitcoin volatility and all that stuff. So I'm sure they're leveraging WBTC in the back for that. And then Uniswap's up there as well. So there's a WBTC Uniswap market. IDEX is up there. So definitely starting to see the DeFi apps climb the list of top holders. So I'm sure that's what is driving this. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, it looks like probably the biggest mover was this person in 32 days ago that has 100 wrapped Bitcoin there. So yeah, like you said, I'm sure someone kind of sitting there for a reserve, probably for a DeFi app or something. I mean, I'm sure there's demand for this, right? Like I know most Bitcoin maximalists would never touch this, but there's also a lot of people that are holding Bitcoin that would love to do something with it and earn interest on it and bring it over to the DeFi space, loan it out, whatever it might be. So I do think this will be growing. You have a little bit of a the wrap process is a little bit weird, and you know, I don't know long term if we're going to see like huge adoption here, but I do think this is going to keep steadily growing.
Yeah, exactly. I just dug into Etherscan as well. They've got like an exchange tab here, so you can see what exchanges are trading WBTC. So at the moment, the number one exchange that's trading it is Kyber Network, with over $200,000 worth of volume over the last 24 hours. Now, Kyber Network's actually integrated with SET protocol. SET uses Kyber Network, you know, in the background to do the transactions. So I think that's where a lot of that volume would have come from. And then there's, you know, there's HitBTC, AirSwap, Bancor, and Uniswap. So it is being traded, it is being used, but yeah, as you said, not sure like the long-term uptick on this. I do like the initiative, but WBTC at the moment as it stands is currently a centralized implementation where you have to trust the custodian of the BTC, you know, when you're minting it on the Ethereum side. I do think we're going to eventually see something like Atomic Swaps take over here and be a more decentralized way, or something like the Switchio, not Switchio, there was something Swingby protocol that I saw a while back. I'm not sure what the status is of that project, but they were trying to do a kind of decentralized way of getting BTC over to Ethereum as well. So I'm not sure whether that's a barrier for adoption right now. I don't think people care that much about you know, the centralization there, simply because as long as there's not much friction, people will still go, will still do it, it'll still be a benefit to them. But as I said, I think we need to see more dApp integrations before we see explosive growth of WBTC.
Yeah, it's interesting there's that much volume on Kyber. I'm looking at the volume for the day right now. Like, that's a decent amount of volume. I'm wondering if there's definitely some arbitrage plays here, because it's actually much lower spot on a lot of the exchanges than it is if you were actually just had Bitcoin. So I wonder if there's some arbitrage happening here, and that's kind of boosting the trading volume and usage too, but it's definitely something worth diving into.
Yeah, it looks like you got some sleuthing to do, Eric.
Yeah, sounds up my alley.
All right, cool. Last thing I wanted to talk about was a tweet that was put out by LoanScan this week. So basically, we reached $1 billion in cumulative volume of crypto assets supplied through various DeFi products like Compound, you know, Maker, and Dharma. This is quite a big milestone. $1 billion in, I think we can call the official launch of DeFi December 2017 when Maker launched. And, you know, it didn't really start taking off till like, I think, Q2 of 2018. When Maker started seeing a lot of ETH flow into it to protect people's CDPs and things like that. But yeah, so we got to $1 billion quite fast, I think, given how small, you know, DeFi still is or was. I mean, it's maybe not as small these days, but I'm curious to see how fast we tick up to $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, whatever. I think it's going to be a lot faster than taking a whole year to get to $1 billion, of course. But yeah, so it's interesting to see how fast that grew. It's also interesting to see the difference in protocols right now and how some protocols are growing and others are losing steam. So Maker dominance is actually down to 77% now in terms of the amount of ETH locked up in it or value locked up in it. That was at 90% like a few, maybe 3 months ago or something. But since we've seen the growth of Compound, especially with their version 2 release, they've taken a large chunk of volume. Dharma, of course, as well. Uniswap, Synthetics platform has grown a lot recently too. And we've seen Maker actually, a lot of people obviously close their CDPs because of the high stability fee, and people are withdrawing their ETH to pay down their CDPs since the ETH price has been going up. So yeah, we're seeing these things kind of oscillate around, but it is important to remember, I think, that DAI is basically powering all these other apps as well. So Compound and Dharma are being powered by DAI, you know, and same with Uniswap and other things like DYDX and stuff like that. So Maker's still playing, I think, one of the most important, if not a critical role within the entire space. So even if it is losing dominance on its platform, DAI is still kind of contributing to the rest of the growth of the ecosystem.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely no denying that. And I guess beyond this number, yeah, total locked value, last time I looked on DeFi Pulse, was like 550 million or something like that. So we're getting up there. I mean, once you start getting into $1 billion and more in value, like, you're starting to talk about a decently sized commercial bank, like in the United States, right? I think if you got up to like $1 billion in total assets, you're probably talking like in the top 500 maybe largest commercial banks in the United States. So slowly like creeping up and becoming like, obviously it's way different in how you measure these two. But to me, it's a very interesting kind of component to think about is comparing how much asset value is locked in DeFi on Ethereum versus kind of your traditional banks, which hold balance sheets and assets as well. So kind of something I always kind of look at on the side as well. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these apps just keep growing, like Compound's crushing it. They're up a lot in locked value since version two, and people seem to love their interest bearing tokens. And, you know, a lot of stuff just kind of moving up the list quickly, like Synthetics, I think, had kind of been at the bottom of the list on DeFi Pulse and is up to number five. And Uniswap continues to do well. I mean, there's just, it seems like there's a new project either launching or launching a new version and gaining new users and volume pretty much every day now. It's tough to even keep up with, which is great.
Yeah, exactly. It's just there's so much going on. There's so much growth. There's so many new apps launching or seeing growth. I think that we're just going to see that continue during this year as well and things mature too. DeFi Pulse is a great website to keep track of this. So yeah, if anyone wants to keep track of the growth, go to DeFiPulse.com basically, and you can keep track of it there. All right, that's it for this week. Thank you everyone for tuning in. If you need to subscribe to the newsletter, go to ethub.substack.com. You can also find the podcast there too. And that's it. If you want to buy some merch, actually, you can find the link in our newsletter. So don't forget to check out that as well. So yeah, thanks everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast.